Accession number 9875, reel 17.
Mr. George Ashurst, reel 17. You were mentioning an incident while you were at the bullring at Etaps, which led to a near mutiny, or at least an incident. This was in 1916. Could you tell me what exactly happened and how the whole thing started?
Yes, well, we were there on the bullring, as they call it. That's a big ring we used to gallop around, stabbing at sandbags and, you know, charging. And, of course, we were all jiggered anyway, because those fellows had no mercy. Come on, let's have more out of you, and this, that, and the other. Anyway, we're all getting jiggered, and there happened to be one Australian going round in his section. And he weren't very strong. Couldn't have been. So he couldn't stick it, you know, any longer. When he came to stab this bag, and said the drill sergeant's there, instead of going to the bag and shoving his beanie right in the bag, he went to the sergeant and shoved it right in him, right in his belly, dropped him on the floor, and of course everybody started running about then, you know. The police came, everybody back to tents.
You were actually out training during this bit.
Yes.
You saw the wounded drill sergeant.
I saw him when he was on the floor. I didn't see him hit him, strike him, but I saw him when he was on the floor, of course, because he was shouting at one another, you know.
Was he badly wounded?
Oh, yes, he'd been hit right in his stomach, right in. Full in, 7 or 8 inches in him. And the police came, of course, and that, and sergeants were shouting, back to your tents. So we had to hurry up and get back to our tents, which was only just one side, not far away, you know. And we got in the tents, and I believe they fixed machine guns here, machine guns there, and anybody that moved was going to be shot down. So we sat in our tents chatting for a while.
What about?
Well, the fella being stabbed and about the damn place we were in, you know, how awful it was. We were all sympathetic for the Aussie, you know, and said he'd done a good job. So then it must have been a couple of hours, I fancy, we stuck it at that. Then all of a sudden, fellas started to move outside the tents, you know, and it was growing, and next thing we heard was, come on lads, come on. Well, we look out of our tent, and there they are, they're all spilling out of the tents, and they're all making for the lane down to the village. So of course we joined in, and the police, they were off, frightened to death. And there's a little bridge, you go over a little bridge into the village, and a railway bridge it was, not a river bridge. And I understood they'd thrown one over there, but I didn't see it, of course. But I understood they'd thrown one over there.
When did you hear that at the time?
Hmm?
Did you hear that at the time?
Yes, as I was running down towards the village. As we were running down towards the village. Anyway,
were there any officers about, or?
Yes. Oh, yeah, they were like nobody amongst the crowd, you know. They were bussing them about, and they weren't trying to stop us. They knew very well they couldn't. We were a thick crowd going out down the lane.
Were you giving them the normal respects?
100 to 200 of us.
How many?
100 or 200 of us, I should think.
And the officers you saw, did you salute them or just ignore them? Or?
Oh, ignored them. There was nothing.
There was no violence offered to them?
No, they didn't. Because they didn't attempt to stop us, you see.
Did anyone
possibly attempt? Possibly if they had done, they'd have been pushed away.
Did anyone attempt to stop them?
No. Only the police, mostly. And then there was nobody else, really.
Were they armed at all? Any of the crowd?
No, they didn't take no arms. No, there was no shooting or anything like that.
What was the aim of the crowd, if a crowd can be said to have an aim?
Just to break out.
Why, though?
They weren't being shut up like villains, you know, like dogs. They weren't being shut up because they were most of them ex-servicemen. You know, most of them, I mean, that had been up at the front fighting, you know, before. Most of them. There were fellows returning after sickness or leave or something.
Did anybody from the infantry base depots join in, the actual battalion, the regimental depots join in?
Oh, no.
So it was just the drafts?
Yes, there were all sorts of men. All from all sorts of regiments. You know, there's no regular battalion there. There are all sorts of men from all sorts of regiments. And, of course, while they were there, they had to drill, and that's the drill they had to do. It was murder.
What happened when you got into a tarp?
Oh, and dashed to the villages and started boozing and buying anything we could, you know, until the officers came and tried to stop it, you know, told the shopkeepers of the pubs not to serve us. But they didn't bother much. So anyway, we had most of what we wanted and then we strolled back. Nobody fetched us back or drove us back. We strolled back, walked back.
So how long had the whole thing lasted? What time?
Probably an hour and a half.
And what time would it have started?
Well, let's see now. Round about dinner, I think. Round about lunchtime, it happened. I should say about 11 a.m, something like that. You know, just before. It was before lunch. And
was there any bad behaviour in it, Arps? Anybody get too drunk or misbehave?
Oh, no. 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 Nothing like that. I hadn't time enough to get drunk before we were all making our way back, you know.
What did you think as you were doing this, did you?
I just went with the crowd, that's all. I didn't think.
I didn't think
of anything much. I didn't think even I was doing wrong by breaking out of the camp or tattling the police. I never thought nothing at all about it.
You weren't involved?
I was just on their side, the crowd's side.
Were there any other corporals involved?
Oh, yes, plenty of NCOs. Plenty of NCOs, but they were as bad as anybody else, if not worse. Now, everybody joined in that was loose. Yeah, everybody, I'm sure, joined in that exodus from that camp when the feud started.
Do you know who started it?
No, not really. Some tent a bit lower down than us first started it, I fancy. He must have said, you know, in the tent, come on, let's have a go, these lads will not shoot. Well, they didn't, and they wouldn't have shot either. They said so. If they'd had orders to shoot, they wouldn't have shot us. No. I should think they wouldn't either. Anyway, when we got back, we weren't long before there was a list up for the line tomorrow morning, that was too.
Was there any other recrimination? Did anyone say anything or do anything when you got back?
No. No, there didn't seem to be any further trouble or anything, you know.
Were you still confined for the rest of the day?
No, we were in our tents. But I wouldn't say we were confined, but we didn't bother to go out again because... But
no more training that
day. It stopped the village from serving us and there was no more training, We sat there, and later on, fellas saw these lists posted up for the front, practically everybody.
Now, you were being sent back. Which battalion were you posted to now?
16th Battalion.
That's the Salford Pals?
Yes.
And where were they when you joined them?
They were somewhere out resting.
You don't know where?
No, I don't know where.
Behind which section of the front were you?
To the right, anyway. On the right of Ypres and Passchendaele, a bit further down. Would it be perhaps towards Plug Street or somewhere there?
And you were behind that, out of
rest? We were behind them, under canvas, as usual.
Which company were you assigned to?
It was A Company, I think, I joined.
What did you think of the battalion? It was a Powell's battalion, a Kitchener battalion, as opposed to the regular battalion you've been in. What differences did you notice?
Oh, they weren't to be compared with the Redless soldiers.
Why not?
Because they didn't seem to have any idea what they were there for and, you know, how to do it. I mean, it was like treating a lot of lads out at streets as an NCO like me, you know, who knew everything. It was like treating a lot of lads from the streets. Like I say, they didn't know how to bomb. They couldn't load bombs. They couldn't put the detonators in. And they were sloppy at drilling. Fairly sloppy at drilling. They hadn't done any much. And to watch a fella like Sharples, who was my lieutenant, well, he could use a rifle like a pencil, a black pencil, a writing pencil. He could handle it as easy as handling one of them, in presenting arms or porting arms or anything. You see? And they didn't seem to be able to handle the rifle at all properly. They hadn't had much education that way. They come out and they hadn't had much drill or anything.
What did they think of you as a
regular? Oh, not much.
You weren't a regular?
Not much at first. Oh, they tried to... Well, besides, I was only a young fella, you know, too, compared to quite a lot of them. Oh, he's only a young fella, you know, shouting this and shouting that. But, no, they didn't think nothing much. Anyway, after I'd told them a few things, you know, they started to talk one amongst the other. Oh, you've been in the line. You've been in the line before. You've been gassed. You've been gassed. The record came out then, you see. So, of course, they had respect then. Oh, yes, they had far more respect. Especially when I first took them in the line.
Before you did that, you were actually involved in the erection of Nissen huts. And you
yes.
had a bit of a row with a colonel with it. Do you want to tell me the full story? Because
yes, well, we'd come out to rest. And we'd only tents, of course. And nothing much else. And our colonel, Abercrombie, made his mind up. Oh, the Nissen huts had been invented then, you see, and they were beginning to dish him out. So our colonel made his mind up that he was going to have some Nissen huts for his battalion and have them, give them a proper rest, comfortable rest. So what he did, he selected an NCO, which of course was the fool, always me, and a man from each company, four men. And the engineers where they built the Disnuts was a couple of miles down the road yonder, another village, a couple of miles away. And He gave me orders to go and take these four men, report at the engineer's camp, and learn how to build Mr. Nuts. You see? So right, we marched off. Well, when I got there, reported the engineer officer. Here's what he says, you four men, go with that officer there. He said, it doesn't need nobody else but you, corporal, you know. So if you do, you're enough corporal just to see how to put them together. All right, I'd never seen them put together and nothing then, you know. But I thought it must be okay and simple, so... All right, and off they went in a lorry, you know, to a wood, cutting trunks down. And I was there all day, watching these engineers put them up, and I did get it off. I did know how to build them.
Could you describe a Nissen hut and how you did build it?
Oh, yes. You got your foundations first, which was six stumps of trees, driven down a foot or two in the ground. Then there was iron frame fitted all round on this. And then, of course, there was the frames that fitted up like that, you know, and met together. And the ends were all one piece. One side was made up, one end, one piece made up, and the other end was made up with a door and a window. You see? And they were lovely huts.
What about the sides and the roof?
There were boards on the floor, and there was boards, tongue and groove boards in the roof, under the corrugated iron, which was very nice, you know, very warm. And, of course, the boards fit in, floated them in, you know, and the thing was done. And of course you'd a big stove that went in the middle, and so I came back and he's got a couple of huts coming, the colonel. And we have to make a start of them. Well, for instance, where am I going to get my tree trunks from? I'm not supposed to cut them trees down and let the farmers see me. Oh, what am I going to do? I'm going to do like I always do. And pinch them when the farmer's not looking, take them down. So we did. Anyway, I got six foundations down. You know, tree trunks about that width. Got them down and got the frame in. Got the frame going right and very nicely done. And it'd be about tea time, I think, when Abercropper came around. Of course, he'd always dip, you know, the sergeant major. And the major, you know, and the police sergeant, all trotting behind him like they usually do when they go anywhere, you know. And he bounced inside this hut, and I'm standing on a box, because I'm just putting a tongue and groove timber in, you know, just fitting one in, and my men, of course, they're round just standing me the timber, that's all they could do when I wanted one. So he walks in, he sees them doing nothing, sees me up there on the box, so he comes straight to me. So he said, Sergeant, Corporal, what are your men doing, lying about, doing nothing? Well, I said, they can't do anything, sir. They can't do this. So, he said, you know, one of these huts is supposed to be go up in 2 hours. He said, you haven't got one up, halfway up yet in a whole day. I've done very well, you know, really. So he said, it strikes me that you, of course, he didn't know me then, you know. I hadn't been with him long. He didn't know me properly. He said, it strikes me that you cannot control your men. Because they were sat there. Well, I've got bloody note, they're not boxed. I said, allow me to tell you, sir, I was controlling men before your battalion was formed. And I was. Oh, in the trench. I said, I was controlling men in the front line trench before your men was formed. Well, his face was here. He was about 6'6", you know. Very, very tall, lanky fellow. And he went white. They all went quiet all round him. Next thing, place this man under arrest. Oh, that's the end of it. I'm under arrest. The sergeant takes charge of me. I have to go and sleep in his tent and the following morning, you know. Then I'm up for orders. Because he tries one or two cases. And then it's me. I got in front of him. Now then, he said, about these huts. So I told him. I said, the men know nothing about building this hut, sir. I said, when I arrived at the engineer's camp, he sent my four men off straight away, cutting trees down in a forest. I said, he said, I was enough to learn how to build them. So, well, because I have to do what an officer says, haven't I? So that's what happened. And I said, there's only me knows how to build them, sir. And I said, I've had the four biggest duds in the battalion, which is the usual thing, sir. Every sergeant major, when there's work, sends the worst soldier in his company to do it. Always. So recognise that, sir. Send for the sergeant majors. So they sent for the sergeant majors, and the sergeant majors told them it was quite right. They always do, you know. And after he'd heard a story like that and found out it was true, he said, all right, he said, I'm sorry for the insubordination, sir. He said, all right, I'll accept your apology, the insubordination. Now, look here. How many men can you work with? I said, I can work with 20, sir, if you give me 20 men and the tools. I can work with 20 and the tools. Right. Sergeant, the major then, he told him, get hold of the 20 men, you know. Get hold of the tools, wherever they come from, and get going. Well, we waltzed some up, you know, then. We didn't put the old battalion undercover, but we made it lovely.
How long did it take to put a Nissen hut up when you got the proper men and equipment?
Well, I should say 3 or 4 hours.
The 2 hours was unrealistic anyway, then.
Oh, yes, that was. But that was engineers putting them up that knew all about them. Has made them. But, well, you've got to get these stumps wherever you got them from. You see, they've got to be sawn down from trees, and you've got to dig them down about 12 inches or so in the ground, you know, to put the iron frame on, nail it on. No nails or hammers are done, you'd not have nothing to do anything with. Using entrenching tools the best way we could. Anyway, I won't bother whether we built any or not, tell you the truth, because that's a good excuse.
Where did you go then from this rest?
Where was it? Did it not say in there? Does it not say in there? No, I can't think what place it was. We were in so many scores of different villages.
Which area? You were all just right of Ypres, though, or just south?
Yes, yes, somewhere there. Yes. And
did you notice any changes in trench life?
Oh, some trenches were a lot quieter than others, you know. Some fronts were very quiet. Other fronts were rough. Oh, yes. There's quiet fronts and rough fronts. And whichever you was going in, you knew whether it was rough or quiet, too.
What was it like in a quiet front?
Well, you didn't. There wasn't much fighting or anything. It was mostly odd sniping. And that's the end of it. Few shells would come over, but not a lot, because they couldn't do a lot by simply shelling you and not attacking and nothing like that. That was a waste. So you simply spent your time in the trenches the best way you could.
How did you feel about being in the trenches again?
Oh, Lord. It was quite common. A common thing to me, going in trenches and coming out. A very common thing it was for me. We were going in there and doing a day or two. Like we went toward Plug Street. We got in the wood there, Plug Street. And we some fellas come and went through us. We came out again and went somewhere else. You see, you did a lot of movement and you didn't know why, many a time. For instance, we went on a front there and we got this line of trenches that our fellas had been in beforehand, and we stopped in them, and a message came up one day to our officer, and I was with him at the time, and it said they wanted some information and there would be a MM for any soldier that went out and brought a German in, or you know, there would be a what's the name for the officers, you know,
Military Cross.
Yes, Military Cross. And anyway, I also wasn't going, and he said to me, "How about it, sir?" "Not bloody likely," I said. "No idea where he is, how many he is, or what he's doing out there. I don't know what he is, or how far he's out there." "No," I said, "I don't mind going when I have a bit of an idea where they are, but I'm not going on that scale. They can stick their MM." And anyway, I had the lad in my platoon. I said, "I know a fella as well go. He used to go on his own many a time at night." I said, "Worthington, a lad from Manchester. He said he had 26 brothers and sisters. I don't know whether it was true. He said he'd never miss me. I've 26 brothers and sisters." Of course, we didn't know whether to believe it or not. That's what he used to tell us. He never wore his tin hat. He never would wear his tin hat. And I said, "He'll go. Worthington will go and have a look." "Yes, he will," the officer said. "All right." So he was on like a little post in front of our line, you know, like little posts in front of trenches. There was a couple of men, you know, on the qui vive with bombs and that. So I went in, fetched him out and told him. "Yes, I'll bring one in," he says. "So, you want anybody going with you?" "No, no, I'll go myself." He wouldn't take anybody with him. About an hour after, he landed back with one. He landed back with one at the end of his bayonet. Yes, he did that. And he killed one, he said. He'd been out there watching and peeping, you know, for Germans. He said, and two come walking towards him, as if they were coming from our lines, you see. He said, and I shouted, "Halt." He said, and they stopped and got their gun, he said, but I banged and shot one, And he dropped, he said, and I pointed the bayonet to the other, said, hey, get moving, go, go on, go on, that way, go on. And he brought him in, took him into headquarters, the officer. The officer sent him down to the headquarters. They sent him down to headquarters, and I suppose they got all the information they wanted. You know, what battalion he was, or what they were doing. Anyhow, a few weeks after that, we all paraded in a village street, and they presented at Wellington with his MM, you know.
What happened to him?
General. See, I couldn't tell you. I don't know whether he died on the Somme or where he died. No, he weren't on the Somme, was he? I couldn't tell you what happened to him. He was all right, as far as I know, when I left.